Hello, Internet! Welcome to episode 231 of the Assorted Calibers podcast, the second minute podcast that is a little bit for everyone. I'm Weirdbeard, and with me tonight is one of the most important voices of the Second Amendment world, Erin Paulette! She's a big deal. How you doing, Erin?
I'm starting to believe I might be a big deal, Weird.
About damn time!
So, for the listeners who are confused as to what's going on New Year's Day, because this is only the second for us, I received an email, and it was titled something like, you know, "Urgent, you've been nominated for the Gundies," and I had no idea what this was, and I'd never heard of the Gundies before, because... Well, okay, I understand it's really big on the gun tubes, but I don't watch those. I mean, look, I'm on a podcast and I don't even listen to my own podcast. So I'm busy doing my own thing. And honestly, I end up doing more of the political and activism side of the 2A rather than gun geeking. And so I'd never heard of this. And I honestly thought it was spam. And so I clicked on it and I was told that I had been nominated for the Gundies, and apparently this is like the Oscars of the gun world. It's only a few years old, but already it is somewhat of a big deal. And this email said that I was one of the most requested nominees for the category of top voices of the Second Amendment this year, and that I should ask my friends to vote for me every day in January. And... It's my understanding that if I should win this particular category, I'll go out to someplace in Texas where they're having this, and there's going to be a presentation, and I'll probably be given some sort of an award. It says that there's going to be an expo and a ceremony, and there's also going to be a range day at Drive Tanks. That's the name of the company in Texas. Presumably I'll be allowed to drive a tank. I'm not sure. However, there's a video that talks about last year's Gundy Awards, and there is, it looks like a Sherman tank literally on the firing range, and they fire it. it might just be a blank. I don't know, but still they are discharging something from the main gun of a battle tank. And then there's more things about people, shooting off RPGs. It looks absolutely insane. And so I would like our listeners, because I presume they like me, to please go register for the Gundies. There is a link in the show notes. And then you can vote for me. And you can vote for me every day this month. And I'm up against some pretty stiff competition, like Coley on Freakin' Noir, and the Armed Attorneys, and Liberty Doll, and Iraq Veteran. I think he's 4/8.
Yeah.
I want to call him. I want to call him Iraq Veteran 88 because I'm thinking of like IG 88. Mm-hmm. Star Trek nerd. Star Trek. Oh my God, they're gonna kill me. Star Wars. Star Wars. I know what it is. I just said the wrong word. Please don't hurt me. But I think it's like, I think it's 4/8, because I think that's like his birthday. He was like born August 8, 1988, whatever. Anyway, I'm rambling. Yeah, I'm up against some really well-known people, and if I'm going to have even a chance of winning this thing, I'm going to need people to vote for me and vote every day. So please do that. And if I win, you know that I don't take pictures of myself, but you also know that if I'm in the right mood, I can really ham it up. I think people have seen me posing with, what is it, Bubba the Gun Truck at Liberty Con, and I will totally do that if they'll let me. If they'll let me do a cheesecake pose on a tank, I will absolutely do that. So I would like to win this. Please help.
And you can help because the links are in the show notes. So go click on that. You need to register. And then I was not aware that my votes come back the next day. And so I will So I will continue to vote every day as well, because this is fun. And I'm also going into the other categories and all that. There is, I think it's most entertaining video, Matt Carricker's in that. Cause like, I haven't had a chance to meet Matt Carricker, but damn it, I'll get Aaron to meet him. So yeah, this is a big deal. This is mm-hmm. awesome. I've got, like I said, like you've always been a big deal to me, Aaron. Let's be honest. We were actually talking about our beginning blog days in the blooper reel for those who are patrons of the show, but we go way back. But it was one of those, like, especially when you announced at the Gun Rights Policy Conference the merger of Pink Pistols and Operation Blazing Sword. I mean, first up, Operation Blazing Sword, like what you did, I've done things considerably smaller than that, and it was exhausting. And putting together Operation Blazing Sword, and then furthermore, making it into a thing, making it to an actual legal entity is absolutely amazing. But then when it suddenly merged into Pink Pistols, and suddenly it's one of those, like, oh my goodness, this is like the entire Second Amendment queer world, like all into one envelope, and you are the God Empress. It's just amazing. And so I will be voting for you. I hope that our lovely listeners will be voting for you as well as all the other, deserving members on this. Cause again, this is a really, really good dais. Like every category I'm looking at, I'm like, oh yeah, they've got some big names. So,
Brandon Herrera is in there for the category of most likely to survive the zombie apocalypse.
Yes. And so, yeah, there's a ton of good influencers and friendly faces within the Second Amendment community. And so I am so glad to see that you are there. And, I hope they weren't just buttering you up in saying that you are one of the most requested people, because you should be.
Well, the point being is that the only people who were nominated were the ones who had the most nominations. Mm-hmm. So I know how trite this sounds, but it's an honor just to be nominated. I mean, really, when you look at the competition I'm up against, I really feel like Schmucky the Clown here. I know you're going to get on my case for that, but it was just, oh, geez, okay.
I mean, when you're up against, you know, glitzy YouTubers, like, you know, there's people like Matt Carricker and all that, but Liberty Doll, she's just people like us and all that. Oh God, her latest video, her baby would not sit still. And so suddenly there was a baby. It was hilarious. go watch Liberty Doll. Cause now she's got a baby too. But yeah, there is certainly a lot of glitz and sturm and drang when it comes to like the influencers and the YouTube people, and we're podcasters. We are much more lowly. It's like TV versus radio. But yeah, no, you deserve every ounce of this. So again, everybody go check out the show notes. Click on the Gundies. I got it I've got a link straight to the Voices of the 2A category where Aaron is in. So you can immediately dive straight into voting for her, and then you can go explore around the site and see who else deserves your vote, and do it every day. That's your morning ritual. Cup of coffee and vote for Aaron.
Yes, please do. Yeah, I know the joke is vote early and vote often, but you can literally do that as long as often as every day.
It's actually okay.
Yeah. So I got one more thing to talk about before I ask you how you're doing. So I get Christmas presents from Lucky Gunner because they're nice and because I'm awesome. And the Christmas gift I got this year was... I don't know really how to describe it. So you know what a turducken is.
Yes, I do.
Okay. For people who don't know, it is a turkey stuffed with a duck stuffed with a chicken.
All of which have been deboned.
Yes. I received this year something called a piekaken, which is a pastry version of a turducken. And in fact, their first pikeaken was a Thanksgiving dish, hence why it's called that. But I received the Christmas version from them, and it was delivered by Goldbelly, which you may not have heard of, but it's, you know, gourmet food that you get delivered to you. And this sucker. So I'm going to dig up the link here. So the Christmas Pikeaken features four of the best-selling products of the holiday all in one. So it's got a base layer of chocolate pecan pie. Then there's a layer of eggnog cheesecake. Then there's red velvet cake. And then it's all layered together with amaretto buttercream and topped with a sweet and tart cherry pie filling. And there are also red and green sprinkles on top. This sucker. It says this package serves 10 to 12 people. And it's true. It's dense like a ice cream cake. Each pikeaken has a 7-inch diameter, measures 5 inches tall, and weighs in at nearly 6 pounds. It's delicious. Please don't get me wrong, but eating a slice is, wow. Okay, let's get the insulin booster handy. It is very rich, and I mean that in both senses of the word. It's very expensive, and it has all the calories. Oh my God, it's good, but just a little bit really fills you up.
Well, I have to say that I have only had like a really, really cheap prefabbed turducken. I think my dad saw one in the meat counter after Christmas, Thanksgiving, one of those where a turducken holiday, and like one of them didn't sell and they were getting rid of it because it needed to either be bought by somebody or thrown away. And and he cooked it for us one evening, and it was not great. But at the same time, I have never actually heard anybody say, oh, turducken, I love turducken. That's one of my favorite meals. So overall, turducken is a big production and a big display with a big wow factor, but I'd be fine with just a turkey. This appears to be just the opposite. This is a big wow factor, because I'm looking at the pictures, and they're in the show notes. It is a spectacle.
It is.
I mean, it is the reason why the terrorists hate us. It is spectacular, and it is a spectacle, but also it looks delicious.
It is.
And I am not much of a dessert guy. I am definitely much more on the I wish turducken was good category, but this looks amazing.
So, Anthony at Lucky Gunner, thank you so much. I appreciate it.
Anthony's good people.
He is. He's such a nice guy. So, that was my holiday, because even though it was for Christmas, we already had our food planned out, so I saved it for New Year's Eve. And I hope I can eat all of it before it goes bad. I think I'm going to have to start dividing it up and giving quarters to neighbors I don't want to waste it. It's so good.
It should freeze well as well.
Maybe. I'll look into that.
I mean, I will tell you right now, like, my wife and I participated in the tradition, which is you take the cake topper of your wedding cake and you put it in the freezer, and then you thaw it out on your first anniversary and eat it. And I was always skeptical of that. We ended up going back up to Maine because my parents took it. We didn't want to travel with it because we were going off on our honeymoon right afterwards. So we thawed it out, and it was one of those like, this is perfectly fine.
Good.
Yeah. So yeah, if you want to freeze some of it, it'll probably freeze quite well.
All right. So yeah, that was my holiday. How are you doing, Weird?
I am doing all right. We had a working holiday. We had a whole bunch of guests over for Christmas, and then my daughter was up in Maine, And my wife and I were, I mean, we kept the podcast going, obviously, because you guys had a show last week. And then my wife was cleaning the house, like getting rid of a whole bunch of stuff, and be like, ever so often she would call down to me and say, come up here, I've got a whole bunch of your stuff, and we're going to clean it out. And it was well needed to be cleaning out a lot of stuff. I found a very, very interesting tidbit from my time as a writer, which I will not discuss on this show because it's not Second Amendment related at all, but it is on my blog, which is weirdworld.com. I did something besides post the blog.
I think you should have a link to that article in the show notes.
I will do just that.
All right.
But I found that, which I thought was lost forever, and I'll leave it at that. There's some deep political stuff on there that we don't need to deal with. So I was busy, and then we had a nice New Year's party at some friends, and then went up to see my folks for my birthday, which is on the 1st. So people keep texting me like for my very cryptic Facebook page that I don't even visit anymore. For a long time, people are like, is this your actual birthday, or because you're not even posting under your real name or anything like that? Like, is this just a default? No, my birthday is January 1st. And and then collected my daughter. And so she's back, and then she's going back to school tomorrow, and back to the old grindstone. But our refrigerator's so full of food. So full of food. So we'll be eating leftovers for a while.
So let's jump into the main topic with something that it isn't strictly Second Amendment related, but I feel that it's relevant if you'll just bear with me. And so you mentioned that your refrigerators were full of food, but this particular individual did not have that. And so it's from CNN. And it tells the story of a man in Erie County, New York, who was stuck on the road because of all the snow, and he was running out of gas, and he was literally afraid he was going to freeze to death, and he started going around knocking on people's houses to see if they would let him in, and they wouldn't. And honestly, I can't blame him, because here's a strange man knocking on their door in the middle of the night asking if he can sleep on their floor. I get it. And he ended up acquiring other people who were stranded, and you know, one of them was an old lady, and they huddled together in a car for warmth, and then eventually, like the next morning, ran out of gas and she needed to use the bathroom, and he didn't know what to do. And eventually he came upon a school. I'm not sure what kind of school. It just says Edge Academy. I don't know if that's an all grades, but what he did was he broke into the school because he knew that they had heat and a bathroom, and he broke in, and also then broke into the kitchen so that he and the people he had acquired, and at this point, there were at least 10 of them. And one person had a dog. And so he got them all into the school so that they would be warm and have something to eat and use the restroom. And he left a note, you know, to whoever it may concern, I'm terribly sorry about breaking the school window and for breaking into the kitchen. Got stuck at 8 p.m. Friday and slept in my truck with two strangers, just trying not to die. There were 7 elderly people also stuck and out of fuel. I had to do it to save everyone and get them shelter and food and a bathroom. Merry Christmas, Jay. And so this was very obviously not the act of a criminal, although he did break the law. And this is the point that I'm trying to make here. By the way, he was not arrested for this. And in fact, the police chief said that, not only a heroic action, but an overall good person. He definitely saved lives that day. And so the point that I want to make here is that there is a concept in law called the doctrine of competing harms. And it states that it's not a specific law, but it's just a concept. And it basically goes, if you have to break the law in order to prevent a greater injustice from occurring, you can do that. And the classic example, like we've seen here, is that if you are in danger of dying from starvation or dying from exposure, you can break into a home in order to keep yourself alive. Mm-hmm. And the parallel here is, this is the same, I really don't want to say justification because it sounds like I'm weasel wording, but it's the same principle in action involving self-defense shootings. Yeah, it's illegal to break in and take someone's food unless you're acting to save your life or the life of others. In the same way, it is illegal to shoot another person unless it's to save your life or the life of others. And I just want people to sort of keep this analogy in their back pocket for the next time a gun prohibitionist starts ranting about, well, I guess, well, they rant about all sorts of other things. But you can use this as an example of, hey, the law recognizes that sometimes it's necessary to break a small law in order to prevent a greater tragedy from happening. And if it works in this case, why can't it work when it comes to self-defense?
No, that's absolutely true. And I mean, the same idea with you're rushing someone to the hospital and they're in dire need of medical attention. Can you break the posted speed limit? Could you run a red light? So long as, of course, obviously you are checking to make sure that you're not going to get yourself into an accident. There's a reason why lights turn red. Ambulances mm-hmm. have the exact same thing. They can run red lights while they have their lights on. It's generally advised for them not to, you know, unless they feel it's absolutely necessary. But also, you're to tie this into the Second Amendment, you often hear people, Joe Biden being one of the people that says this, will say that the Second Amendment's not an absolute right. And that is absolutely true. But then they turn around and make it say that, oh, we can ban people from carrying firearms. We can have gun-free zones. We can limit magazine capacities. We can ban things like AR-15s and double-stack pistols and what have you. And in fact, no, the it's not an absolute right is very similar in the, you know, obviously, you know, breaking into property and all that is something that's protected. I mean, it's protected under the Fourth Amendment right, but also just under common law. The Second Amendment's the other way around is the right of the people to keep their arms shall not be infringed. Like, stay the heck away from it, except if you are doing it to harm other people, if you are threatening people, if you're shooting in an unsafe manner, if you're committing murder, that is all where the Second Amendment ends. And that is where the limitation of the rights goes. It's not on adding, you know, government oversight and overreach onto our rights. But it is in fact just saying that it's only works except when it's you are harming others.
Mm-hmm. I believe it was Oliver Wendell Holmes who said, the right to swing your fist ends where my nose begins.
Yeah, I don't know if he, I mean, that does sound like something he would say, but that quote is correct, and I adhere to that logic.
Well, yeah, it's basically, yeah, rights aren't unlimited because you can't use them to commit crimes. Mm-hmm. You have freedom of speech, but that doesn't mean you can plagiarize someone, mm-hmm. you know, because you are doing harm to them, and therefore you can't plead freedom of speech over that. So just same principle, and use it the next time you get involved in an argument.
And also, just, you know, good work on Jay for doing all that and leaving that heartfelt note, you know, so that, you know, he could show. I gotta wonder too on that. Clearly, I think his last name is edited out on that. It looks like there's some white space on that whiteboard that might be, more to it. But I wonder if he left like his phone number or something so they could contact him.
Probably. I mean, he seems like the kind of guy where he would be willing to make restitution for the damage he did.
Yeah, especially if he's offering $500 just to sleep on somebody's floor. One must assume that he had the $500 with him or easy access to it. So yeah, it does seem like the type of guy that, look, I'll break the windows and I'll break this and I'll eat the food in the kitchen, and you know, to help us stay comfortable in this terrible situation. But yeah, if you guys need the money back, please give me a shout. So it sounds like he did absolutely everything right, especially he first was checking in with residences that were occupied and got a hold of people. Obviously 911's not going to do anything. There's another Second Amendment angle. There's times when 911 is just as useless as anything else.
Well, he called 911, or at least the police at first, and they mentioned that they weren't able to get to him due to the dangerous storm conditions. They couldn't.
Yep.
It's not that they couldn't help him. They couldn't get to that location.
Yeah, they couldn't help anybody.
Yeah, pretty much.
If one of those houses started burning down, the fire trucks aren't coming.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah, it's a really good story, and I'm glad you found it, Aaron.
Thank you.
So moving into directly Second Amendment related news, there is this story. I got it from The Reload. New Jersey legislature passes sweeping new gun carry restrictions and insurance mandate. And this is an interesting story. I actually need to start reaching out to some people to maybe do some interviews on this, because this is an absolute mess. But essentially, New Jersey is now following in New York's footsteps with making it so. Essentially, all right. Well, as you all know, New Jersey has been legal to carry. As far as I can remember, I don't know the history very, very well, but essentially it has been a may issue state for a long, long time. And that may issue is not you. And so it's only the most connected people get a carry permit in New Jersey. It's not even like Massachusetts, where certain towns and certain police jurisdictions, yeah, they're fine. They don't care. They'll issue it like any other state. But then other places like Boston, like Springfield, like any of the larger cities, any of the places that have large minority populations, let's be honest here. If you live in a diverse neighborhood, chances are in Massachusetts, you're not going to get a gun permit. New Jersey, it's just, unless you are very well known, you are not going to get a gun permit. And now that NYSERPA v. Bruin has said that that is unconstitutional, okay, we'll issue permits, but now we're going to restrict where you can carry. And it is damn near everywhere. Like, you can't carry in your own car. And then there's, I'm trying to think if he's got a list of the sensitive places, but it's
okay. So it contains a list of more than 20 sensitive places where licensed carry is forbidden, including, and I don't think this is all 20, schools, government buildings, polling places, bars and restaurants, theaters, sporting arenas, parks, airports, casinos, and childcare facilities.
I mean, that is probably not all of it, but that's most days you're going to cross into, especially, I don't know how on how deep the parks go. I mean, obviously Oddballs talked about Tennessee laws and park carry, and how there could be just like a parking lot that happens to be a state park. So or university property and things like that without you knowing it. But yeah, this is getting super duper obnoxious, and I felt that what tied in beautifully is well, of course there's exceptions. First up, I think a lot of these, like including New York's sensitive places movement, I think there's going to be a lot of, if you were the type of people who were getting your carry permit when everybody else was getting denials, if you get caught illegally carrying a gun in a quote unquote sensitive place, well, maybe that that case will kind of go away quietly, or you can pay a small fine and we'll look the other way rather than needing to go through some tough trial and have criminal charges leveled against you. But there has been, there is an exception to this, is that, judges, prosecutors, and attorneys are exempted from many of the locations in the sensitive locations in New Jersey. But also, pointing out that, according to Rob Romano on Twitter, accordingly, not only can judges, prosecutors, and attorney generals carry handguns into schools, museums, zoos, and casinos, but they can carry machine guns into all those places now as well.
Rules for thee and not for me.
Correct. And so, yeah, this is just them trying to preserve what is an unconstitutional right and keeping the dirty, unwatched masses from protecting themselves.
So, some good news coming out of New York.
Yes, this is a very, very good one. I will have to say, I started. Are you good at reading these court rulings? Because I read
this one and I was able to get through it. It wasn't dense legalese.
My eyes started crossing on it. So
sure,
I got the general, which is the New York's red flag law, which they call a TERPO, temporary extreme risk protection order, has been ruled unconstitutional by the, they call it a Supreme Court, but it's also the. So
here's the thing. The New York Supreme Court is not what we think of when we think of a state level Supreme Court. That's actually the New York Appeals Court. This is just a high court in Monroe County of New York. So it's not the win that I originally thought it was, but still a pro-gun ruling coming out of New York State is fantastic. Mm-hmm. And I will try and keep this very brief. This doesn't affect just TERPOs, but also ERPOs. And apparently those are two different things in New York. You've got the temporary extreme risk protection order and the non-temporary. And what it goes into is that it states, well, it compares TERPOs and ERPOs to other forms of involuntary commitment and, I don't know what the term is, but when you check to see if someone is in their right mind. And it basically says, in all of these other cases involving mental health, it requires a trained professional, a trained medical professional, a trained mental health medical professional to make this call. And there are all these court cases that talk about how New York has affirmed the right of people, even the people that are in mental health distress, to receive fair treatment. And while the police can be sent to investigate and bring the person in, the police always defer to the medical practitioner. However, we've got now these TERPOs and ERPOs where not only are non-medical personnel doing it, but laymen and, you know, judges. Actually, I don't think he said judges. I think it was like lawyers, police officers, and even just, you know, John Q. Public, because it all started with a man trying to get either an ERPO or TERPO against his girlfriend. And the judge makes the point that, look, it says here in the law that this needs to be done by a mental health professional, but TERPOs and ERPOs are not being done by mental health professionals. They're being done by laymen. And here's how we do all other mental health things in this state. And they all worry about the rights and due process, and they make sure that mental health professionals are consulted. So why is this different? And we think it's because there is the perception of the Second Amendment as a second-class right. And because of this, and because that there are no provisions to ensure that this is done in order to treat the I don't want to call them victims, but these people who of whose mental health we are concerned, since there are no provisions to treat them properly and in accordance with the way every other form of mental health is handled, we judge TERPOs and ERPOs as they are presently drafted to be unconstitutional. And it was phrased that way because I believe the judge is stating, okay, New York legislature, go back and rewrite this. And the best part of this for me is that it's not the actual last line, but the conclusion of the argument before they lay down their decision where they state that, you know, it's deemed unconstitutional and the petition they reference is dismissed in its entirety. The last line of the argument, right after it says that TERPOs and ERPOs are deemed to be unconstitutional by the court as per this ruling as presently drafted, period, it cannot be stated clearly enough that the Second Amendment is not a second-class right, nor should it ever be treated as such.
Unfortunately, yeah, it's not as high a court as you were hoping, so there probably will be an appeal, but that's good to have written in writing, especially in the state of New York.
Absolutely. And yeah, this is going to be fought, and it will probably be fought all the way up to the SCOTUS, in which case I hope we get Judge Clarence Thomas doing a version of Did I Stutter?
But also, we really need to keep the word of mouth campaign going through because ERPOs, Purpos, Derpos, all the different versions of this and red flag laws are the dumbest laws on the planet. They are gun control, wearing a white lab coat and pretending it's a doctor. It is the worst laws possible because number one, we've just talked about multiple, you know, spree killers that were known to law enforcement that were in states where ERPOs existed or red flag laws, and they weren't used, even though there was multiple reports of dangerous activity. But also it's you're having someone who's having a mental health crisis, and either you're reporting them because you think that they're going to harm themselves or you think they're going to harm somebody else. And the solution is to come and take their guns away and lock their guns up and leave them alone. Because none of these laws have any provision towards getting the person the help that they need. It is exclusively take the guns away. And that makes absolutely zero sense. And so we need to keep a word of mouth campaign going on anyone who thinks, oh, red flag laws, that's common sense gun control. You're locking up guns, but letting someone who is in a mental health crisis just leave them alone and unsupervised. What part of that is smart?
Mm-hmm. As I think it was Sean Sorrentino who said, you're arresting the guns, but you're leaving the person to harm themselves in other ways.
Mm-hmm. Or in the case of if you are calling in on a stalker or someone who you've had a rough breakup with and they are having boundary and or violent issues, you know, an abusive spouse, and you're calling in on them and saying, look, they've got a whole bunch of guns and they're threatening to use them on me. Well, all of a sudden the police show up at your door and come and take all your guns away. You're going to know who called it in, because trust me, they've contacted you before. I mean, nobody's going straight to these red flag laws. People are, they're going through the traditional method of calling the cops, possibly taking out a regular restraining order and all that. And now all of a sudden this person's coming through. They know who you are. There's a reason why you called them. They know that you called them. And so now they've been violated and they're left unsupervised. Does you think that makes them less dangerous or more dangerous?
Also makes me wonder if perhaps a stalker could call in a red flag law on their victim, rendering them helpless.
Given that, again, as we've said here, there's not really any serious judgment. I mean, the the call would need to seem serious enough. I guarantee that there are safeguards against just crank red flags. But at the same time, so long as the person's not completely insane, I would be nervous. Let's just say I've been threatened with red flags by people who just disagree with my position on the Second Amendment. And even though these people have been crazy, these are not rational or good people. And these are not people that never by anybody that I've known personally. So those two factors are a huge feather in my cap at preventing a red flag law from happening. But it still makes me nervous because once the ball gets rolling, there ain't nothing I'm going to do to stop it until after the fact. And so, yeah, they are also rife for abuse. And so you're not wrong, Aaron. So speaking of someone who should have gotten a red flag law because they were known by the police, and speaking of sensitive areas that you definitely should never want to conceal carry in, there was a machete attack in Times Square during the New Year's Eve celebrations.
And I want to point out, because I have one of these, that's very obviously a cold steel kukri machete, which is a very fine machete. I've had mine for 10 years now. I've used it and abused it, and it still keeps working, still got a very sharp edge. So I recommend it to all preppers and people looking for a universal hacking tool. The point that I'm making here is you can get it on Amazon and have it delivered to your doorstep. So New York City has all of these laws, and this guy still got a machete delivered to his doorstep. Although, who knows, New York may change that now, but...
Well, I would add he's not from New York. He actually is from the great state of Maine. He is from Wells, Maine, according to the sources. I assume how it's written that he is actually currently a resident of the state of Maine. Which is one of the most gun-friendly places in the world. And so even if New York can ban all of that stuff, it's a constitutional carry state. But it also means that he could have easily brought a gun with him if he had decided to do that instead of the very large knife, which is just as illegal as a gun on the streets of New York.
Yeah, especially since, according to the news... not the newspaper, it's CNN, but apparently expressed a desire to die and to join the Taliban. Yeah, that was really weird, because I'm reading the title, but he expressed a desire in his diary to join the Taliban and die as a martyr. Why he didn't bring a gun, I don't know. I'm thankful he didn't, but that's kind of a mystery to me.
I mean, this is clearly someone who doesn't spend a whole lot of time thinking things through, because we can think of just off the top of our head, we can think of a dozen ways he could have made this worse. And thankfully he didn't kill anybody. Seems like all the officers that he did injure will make a full recovery. So good on that. This was ugly and bad. I really just wanted to point it out to show that all the restrictions that New York has, including all these sensitive locations, including Times Square itself, where, we concede you can get a carry permit, that's fine, but you can't carry in any sensitive places, which is the majority of New York City. But yet this dude walked in with a machete and could have walked in with a gun. And certainly that would have set off a metal detector if he had passed by any of those, because that's a lot of steel. Cold steel, if you will. I couldn't resist. But so I'm glad they stopped him. I'm glad he's arrested. I'm glad he is in New York and not in the state of Maine. Good riddance. And New York won't get this. New York will learn nothing from this. So moving into a slightly lighter topic than terrorist attacks in New York City, I wanted to talk about another great podcast. Of course, we've talked about it on the show before. Is Stephen Gutowski has a great podcast called the Weekly Reload, and And in this podcast, the one that was released just before Christmas, he interviews Mark Bryant of the Gun Violence Archive, and essentially talking about this CDC story that we've talked about, where the CDC met with several anti-gun groups, and Mark was one of these people, to talk about removing defensive gun use data from the CDC's website for people to access. And I just wanted to say that this was one of literally the best interviews I have ever heard, in the fact that Mark Bryant is very clearly on the other side of the Second Amendment as us. I'm not going to go so far as to say he's anti-gun. He doesn't speak about what laws he supports or any things like that, but he certainly has a certain level of hostility towards the Second Amendment supporters that is very clear with the words that he chooses in discussing the issue. And Steven gives him all the room to talk about his point and to make his point, and shows him a ton of respect. He's not there to attack him or beat him up. It's not an ambush. But also, he asks some tough questions and puts his feet to the fire and really stands up for the Second Amendment in this. And I gotta say, I think Steven really shines in his podcast when he is interviewing people on the other side of the fence, because he does a job that I don't think I could ever do. It's amazing. A really, really good podcast. So highly recommended. If you don't listen to haven't listened to the Reload podcast before, give it a listen. It's worth a listen. And definitely check out the Mark Bryant episode.
And now, the saga of the Buttmaster.
And now for something completely different. Yes, you heard that right. Aaron said Buttmaster. Specifically, the Serbu Buttmaster. So first, in case you don't know, so Mark Serbu is a gun maker out of Florida, and he makes all sorts of crazy firearms. I believe it's discontinued, unfortunately. He used to make the Serbu Super Shorty, which was either a Mossberg 500 or a Remington 870, where he would buy virgin receivers from either Remington or Mossberg and then convert them into a pistol grip short-barreled shotgun that would count as any other weapon. And sold those. It was like a 3-shot pump-action shotgun that came with a leg holster. He's also got the Serbu BFG 50 caliber rifles. He's got a whole series of, he's got a semi-auto one, and he's got a bolt action and all that. He's got the RN 50 for Royal Nonsuch 50 that, most famously, blew up, from a hot load. Everyone believes it was not his fault. Nothing to do with Serbu. The gun was extremely strong, but everything has its limits. In front of Kentucky Ballistics, Scott got nearly killed by a gun explosion, and that was a Serbu firearm. But one thing that Mark Serbu has made was something that he called the Buttmaster, that was entirely for just his own sense of humor.
And this makes Oddball's Trash Panda gun look glittering in comparison.
Oh, it is straight up like a hood rat zip gun. It is a super duper short barrel screwed onto the end of a tube receiver that has an integral striker and charging handle action, and a little safety hook. And essentially, it works very similar to the Altor in the fact it slam fires a little 22, and it was, he made it just for giggles.
It honestly, it looks like he took a Maglite Mini and turned it into a gun, because it's that small.
Yep, I mean it is literally, yeah, just a little zip gun like you might see made by a machinist in like an auto body shop and selling to criminals. It is that. And the whole joke was that it was implied that this was a gun that you could carry in your rectum. And he even had a rectal insertion suppressor for it.
Oh.
But so he made it, dead serious.
I'm sorry, but you said but, and I had to laugh.
And it was, and he made just the one, and he mostly and registered it with the NFA as I believe it's in any other weapon, and the suppressor was also registered with the NFA, and that was the only thing he had. He said it was briefly listed on his website, but he never sold any of them, and it was only listed as, I think he said, listed as a pen gun, not as a buttmaster. And then all of a sudden he started hearing people laughing because in Canada's latest gun ban, the Serbu Buttmaster is one of the hundreds of guns listed by name. And people were laughing. I mean, obviously the Black Rifle Coffee was listed in their assault weapons ban. And it's one of those, like, what is Black Rifle's a coffee company? What type of illegal guns are they making? AR15.com was listed as a gun. It's one of those, that's a web forum. And we speculated, we talked about it on the show, on where this could be and what's going on with this. But Mark Serber was very perplexed because the only people that he thought should know about the Buttmaster specifically by name was the NFA. And of course, if you have dived into that any bit, the NFA is kind of a sticky source because it's considered privileged tax information as far as the registry goes. So things like, we don't know exactly how many of which guns are on the registry. And it's also hard to dig into if someone finds a machine gun in an attic to find out if it ever was registered, because it is so, without the linking paperwork to the registry, it is very, very difficult to get the ATF to release information about this registry. And so he was wondering if there was a leak somewhere in the ATF that was feeding information to Canada about NFA items. But unfortunately, as cool a conspiracy theory as that is, there is actually an Interpol. Mark Serber discovered that there's an Interpol gun list that lists the makes and models of guns that are on the NFA, not who owns them or serial numbers or any of the information that's on the registry, but just letting them know about various, quote unquote, dangerous weapons, which is what the NFA is supposed to be covering. But it's a friggin' 22 pen gun. And so this Interpol report is available to Canada, and this is likely where they got it.
But still, Canada has banned by name the one-off prototype, and it's in their law forbidding the Buttmaster.
They are butthurt about the Buttmaster.
Yes, they are.
I may petition Aaron that we were talking about titling this episode Saga of the Buttmaster, but maybe butthurt about the Buttmaster might be better.
Actually, you came up with both of them. Saga sounds more heroic and impressive and therefore absurd, but butthurt about Buttmaster is punchy and crass. I don't know. I like them both.
Well, you guys clicked on this podcast to listen to it, so you know what the title is, but we don't. All right. Back to anti-gun shenanigans. It's time for another weird audio fisk on the Brady Campaigns podcast that supposedly takes down the pro-Second Amendment talking points. In my next installment of fisking the Brady Campaign's attempt at rebutting Second Amendment talking points, we cover one that really gets their dander up.
Statement number 7. A good guy with a gun stops a bad guy with a gun. So we should just arm folks.
Oh, they hate the pro-2A bumper sticker slogans. The, if guns are outlawed, only outlaws will have guns. If guns cause crime, then forks make people fat. I carry a gun because a cop is too heavy. When seconds count, the cops are minutes away. Guns don't kill people, people kill people. And it takes a good guy with a gun to stop a bad guy with a gun, among many others. These things piss them off because they are as true as they are simple. Of course, bumper stickers aren't facts, but it's not like I'm ending my FISC after just this one clip.
Oh, goodness. Oh, I don't even know what to say. Well, actually, I'll tell you what I say. My name's Tanya. Just so you know, I'm the Director of State and Federal Policy here at Brady.
I have Tanya's resume in the show notes. She's a lawyer and has been doing lawyer things most of her adult life.
And I hear this a lot. And my immediate response has always been that that assertion is, one, wrong. And two, that it's really dangerous. There is no factual support for the assertion that a good guy with a gun stops gun violence.
Oh, yeah? Think of a mass shooting. Now think of how it ended. In rare circumstances, though more common than they used to be, the killer is taken alive by armed people. And they're apprehending a killer, which is pretty good of them. Most of the time, the killer dies, either from being shot by an armed citizen or law enforcement, which is pretty good, or they kill themselves, which is also good. Okay, that last one was glib. But even when the killer takes their own life, they don't do it in a vacuum. They're surrounded by good guys with guns, and they choose to take their own life rather than being apprehended by the good guys with guns. With the exception of the killer who shot Gabby Giffords and killed six others, he was tackled by unarmed bystanders. Every other shooting I can think of, good people with guns were the deciding factor on when the killing stopped. Also, in the Gabby Giffords shooting, there was an armed civilian there ready to take action. But he saw that the shooting was over and never drew his gun. Many news stories claim he almost shot the wrong man. But that, like these crazy statements by Tanya, are just propaganda to keep the lie alive.
In fact, people very rarely use guns successfully to defend themselves from crimes, and armed civilians have very rarely successfully intervened in the hundreds of mass shootings in America.
Except when President Obama commissioned the CDC to run a study on gun violence, likely as a means to push for gun control, as it was a key platform of his presidency, the study found the low estimate was 500,000 people every year defending themselves with a firearm. The high estimate is 3 million defensive gun use. Likely the real number is somewhere in between. Even at the rock bottom estimate, does 500,000 people every year sound like a rare occurrence? Especially when only about 100,000 people are killed or injured with guns every year, and it's a national emergency, according to Brady. Also, as far as citizens stopping spree killings, that's complicated. One huge factor is if an armed citizen is present at a spree killing, then generally they are quickly stopped, and it doesn't become a spree killing. Also, very often spree killers plan out their attacks so they can face minimal opposition, and frequently carry out their attacks either in areas that are posted or legally restrict the carrying of personal weapons, or in states that heavily restrict carry. So even if carry was legal there, A, getting the proper permits is very difficult or impossible, and B, there isn't as much of a gun culture, so the idea of somebody just carrying a gun seems alien. Still, just off the top of my head, I can think of several potential spree shootings where a private citizen intervened and stopped the shooting, either before anybody was killed or before it could reach the threshold of a mass shooting. We had the West Virginia woman who popped a man in a park who started shooting at a birthday party with a rifle. We, of course, had the amazing marksmanship of Eli Dickin in Indiana. And we had the Amazon driver who shot an armed man in the gun-free zone of an Amazon warehouse before he could kill anybody. That's just 2022, and only the stories that made the national news. Of course, in the show notes, I have a report from Dr. John Lott that shows that the FBI numbers of armed citizens stopping mass shootings is off by a factor of 10, meaning nearly half of all active shooter events were stopped by an armed citizen. Go check the show notes, as Dr. Lott details his methods and shows his data. Unlike this podcast, where they just want you to take their word for it. And I think I've just proven what Tanya is claiming simply isn't true.
Unfortunately, the recent shootings in Uvalde, where there were 7 armed officers, and in Buffalo, where an armed security guard was shot and killed, has shown us even more clearly that even trained armed men cannot prevent mass shooting events.
The Uvalde police were trained to engage the shooter as fast as possible, training that they ignored. And it wasn't until one officer broke rank and breached the classroom that the attack was brought to an end. Not only did the cowardice and incompetence of the Uvalde police lead to more people getting shot, it likely led to more wounded victims succumbing to their wounds. Very similar levels of incompetence happened at the Marjory Stoneman Douglas School in Florida.
Yet Brady advocates for gun control rather than admonish incompetence and cowardice from the men and women who swear an oath to uphold the law and keep the peace, and then fail to perform those duties. As for the Buffalo shooter, I acquired a copy of the live stream and watched it. It's not in the show notes. But the killer exited his car right in front of the store, shot a woman who was walking in the open, then immediately engaged the security guard through the glass storefront. The man didn't stand a chance. And it was reported that the shooter had visited the store before the shooting and knew where the guard was posted. Given that this was before the NYSERPA ruling, and Buffalo still doesn't allow people to carry lawfully, despite it being illegal for them to do so, the killer was all but assured that once the security guard was neutralized, he wouldn't be encountering any opposition until he heard police sirens. These are not the examples you want to give to make your case.
So when there is an attempt by a good guy with a gun, what we've seen is more often than not, it actually undermines law enforcement efforts as they act quickly to respond to shooting incidents, placing more people in harm's way. We've even seen many incidents where that so-called good guy with a gun ends up getting shot and killed by law enforcement because they're confused about who the actual perpetrator is.
They've seen so many instances that they don't even cite them. They can name Uvalde and Buffalo, but where are these cases? I can think of one that happened in 2021 in Colorado, where an armed citizen stopped a cop killer and potential spree killer, and then was killed by the police. But this wasn't mistaken identity. This was rank police incompetence. The answer is not to ban guns, but to train police better and not stand behind officers who don't exercise their duties or follow their training. But no. Tanya is weaving a fantasy where guns are useless in the hands of law-abiding people, and maybe doing the right thing will just get you killed by the cops. So stand with Brady and just give up your rights and your guns. They're only useful when criminals use them.
But what we do know, what there is data about, is that more guns create more opportunities for injury and death, not fewer. And again, this is rooted in data and evidence. So I think it's really important to start there, instead of starting with this assertion that somehow a good guy with a gun stops gun violence.
Is it now? Hey, look, I have show notes. Listeners should be able to see them on their streaming app. But you can always go to assortedcalibers.com and read them there. I just outlined the data showing that defensive gun uses are very common, and armed citizens stopping potential spree killings is also common. You know what else is in the show notes? A link to the Brady Campaign website where I downloaded the podcast to cut these clips. They have 4 links for the whole podcast, not just this one question. One of them is the Brady internal recruitment and donation page. One is an opinion piece from the New Yorker. Another, an opinion piece from the New York Times, which is behind a paywall and you can't read it without a subscription. And one page from the Sandy Hook Promise, an anti-gun group that does have some links and footnotes. And this is my 5th segment on this one podcast. And I have more links than their whole show. So her definition of data is different than mine. And the data I'm citing doesn't paint the same picture she's painting. Go ahead, read my notes, and then read theirs, and see what you think.
The most important point that I want to make, and I think it's something we don't always necessarily think about, is that this is not born of facts. It's born by the gun industry and the NRA. In particular, it was born following the Sandy Hook shooting to perpetuate a guns everywhere agenda, which is not about protecting people or upholding rights, which is about selling more guns.
Except that I just showed the facts that say you aren't telling the truth. The most important fact I have to say in this FISC is Tanya is a goddamn liar, and she should be ashamed of herself for getting paid by an anti-gun group to push laws and lies that actually get people killed.
So the good guy with a gun fallacy is just one more example of the lies they will tell to sell more guns at the cost of people living in America, of how they will always put profits over people.
Famed Nazi propagandist Joseph Goebbels said at Nuremberg in 1934, "The cleverest trick used in propaganda against Germany during the war was to accuse Germany of what our enemies themselves were doing." This is frequently translated to "accuse your enemy of what you are doing." They are accusing the supporters of the Second Amendment as lying for profit. Yet Tanya is lying and getting paid to do it. And the data is in the show notes to prove it. Those are your anti-gun talking points and a few rebuttals to combat them.
All right, Weird. So you have been in the habit of asking me how I thought you did. Mm-hmm. And this one was a return to form, or I should say, well, I don't know if it's my favorite, but it's right up there. And I really, really liked it. You made a lot of really good points, and I have saved this in my personal notes.
I won't lie. While I was writing this, I'm like, I nailed this. I think Aaron's going to like this one.
Oh, yeah. You did.
And I got to say, I put in my link to the show notes, I put it in at the very, very end of the Fisk. I put the BS asymmetry principle. A link to the explanation of that. It's a nice little comical page on it, but essentially talks about the fact that it's super duper easy to say something that's not true, but it's far harder to dispel it being not true. Is I could just say I am a jelly donut, and you would need to have a picture of me or able to get a hold of me to realize that I'm not full of jelly to prove that I am not a jelly donut. And so it is, obviously I've spent orders of magnitude more time fisking this one podcast than they took to actually make the podcast. But I do like that it's laying out all of these anti-gun talking points and giving me a chance to dismantle them and then leave links for people to reference. And so again, use those links, use these talking points. This is arming you for around the water cooler discussion or in the holidays, someone brings up something. Actually, my father was actually talking about, how dangerous the United States is compared to all other countries. And I referenced where the United States is in violent crime statistics, around the world, that I used in one of my audio fisks. And that's the whole point for me doing these. Plus, I hope you had fun listening to it.
Well, I certainly did. All right, on to a less fun but very necessary topic. Following up on a topic I mentioned several weeks ago, David doesn't talk about guns, but instead talks about tourniquets.
Hi, and welcome to Gun Lovers and Other Strangers. In episode 228, Aaron mentioned a chapter of the Pink Pistols hosting a Stop the Bleed class. She also stressed the importance of having and knowing how to use a tourniquet. This made me wonder how many people are interested in getting a tourniquet and training, but don't know where to start. Back in the before times, I was in this position. Thanks to a number of knowledgeable friends, I was able to add a good quality tourniquet and basic med kit to my range bag. I discussed this in my segment in ACP episode 150. Unfortunately, my plans for organizing a Stop the Bleed class were sabotaged by governmental and corporate responses to the worst plague ever. Now that society has initiated a return to a reasonable semblance of normalcy, I'm attempting to resume that plan. There are a number of tourniquets on the market, a few excellent, some good, and too many that are worse than useless. I'm going to focus on the top end of that scale, but I urge our listeners to do their own research. The two most popular and preferred tourniquets currently available are the CAT and Soft T versions. The Soft T is available from TACMED Solutions and the CAT from North American Rescue. Be aware, there are many cheap knockoffs on the market, so I strongly recommend buying direct where possible. As with any product, there are a number of pros and cons. For example, as the older of the two, the CAT has been around longer and has more name recognition. First responders stock it almost exclusively. When digging through a medical kit in a government vehicle or facility, it's very likely a CAT is in the bag. The CAT is also considered very easy to self-apply with only a little practice. However, due to this and some other features, the CAT isn't as sleek when packed and can be bulkier to store. This may not be a major consideration for most, but it's still good to know. The Soft T, specifically the current wide version, is considered easier to apply to another person than the CAT and packs flatter for easier storage. Either one is an excellent choice and would serve well in any trauma kit. Personally, I went with the CAT due to the easier to self-apply aspect, but it was a tough choice. Both of these tourniquets run around $30 as is and are sold alone or as part of an individual first aid kit, or IFAC. It's not enough to have the equipment to apply aid, we also need knowledge. This is where training classes come into play. Whether basic first aid, CPR, or a stop the bleed class, just like with firearms, I urge everyone to seek out as much training as possible. According to the U.S. Bureau of Labor Statistics, there were 5,190 fatal work injuries in 2021. The National Highway Traffic Safety Administration estimates 42,915 people died in motor vehicle traffic crashes that same year. To paraphrase the NRA tagline, how many of these deaths could have been prevented by a good guy with a med kit? I expect quite a few. Remember, it's not just in self-defense situations that we're our own first responders. Be prepared and stay safe.
Oh, well, that ain't hardly mosquito bite.
Kaylee, stay with me. Stay with me. Can you move your feet?
Are you asking me to dance?
She's going to shock.
Kaylee, Amy, you have to focus.
The infirmary working?
Yeah, we got stuffed.
That about wraps up this segment. If you have any questions for me or suggestions for future segments or a comment on a past segment, please post them on the Assorted Calibers Podcast Facebook or MeWe pages, and Aaron or Weird will make sure I see them. I'm also a contributor on the Blue Collar Prepping blog, which can be found at bluecollarprepping.blogspot.com. We're always looking for people interested in submitting posts to the blog, so please check out the site. Finally, I'm also a published author, and books with my stories can be found on Amazon under the name Brenna Bock. That's B-R-E-N-A-B-O-C-K. And my first story under my actual name is now available. Look for Saints of Malta on Amazon. That's all for now. Thanks for listening. I'm David, and this is Gun Lovers and Other Strangers.
So, yeah, tourniquets, first aid in general is something that's very near and dear to my heart because, well, prepping. And I honestly feel that if you carry a gun to end a life on your person, then you should also carry a tool to save a life on your person, and you should be trained in both.
I can't argue with that. And I will have to say also, the chances of you bumping into somebody that needs shooting is considerably lower than bumping into somebody who's leaking and needs that leak stopped.
Mm-hmm.
And so the ability to have first aid equipment on you and having something as life-saving as a tourniquet. Actually, we were mentioning the terrorist attack in Times Square, the terrorist attack that happened in Boston, the Boston Marathon bomber. One of the reasons why they think there was a lot of people that lost limbs, unfortunately. And one of the reasons why they think the death toll, I think it was only like six people, I think, that died. I don't know off the top of my head, and I apologize to anybody who is touched by this tragedy that for me not having that information right off the top of my head. But the numbers were surprisingly low, especially given that it was an explosive attack. And one of the reasons why they believe the survival rate was so high was because just before the bomb went off, a National Guard group had run the marathon in their full battle rattle, and or at least in uniform, and part of their uniform they had their IFACs, their individual first aid kits, and so they had tourniquets on them, and they were immediately slapping tourniquets on those horrible wounds and getting the bleeding stopped so that those people could get to the nearby hospitals in Boston and have their lives saved. So Yeah, this is good, and I think I need to get off my butt. I'm going to be clicking on David's show notes and either grabbing one or both of these and then start looking at some instructional videos just to get the basics. I mean, I have Red Cross first aid training, and I've got like a whole bunch of medical knowledge because I'm a biologist and I've worked in hospitals. So between that and just some instructional videos, I could get like 90% of the way there, and then I should just go find a Stop the Bleed class.
Yes, you should. So because you said that, I have some videos linked, and I think they're all from the same person. And so there's a video on how to apply a cat tourniquet, and then there's how to apply the SOF tourniquet. And there are also some videos on how to store them and stage them. And stage them needs a little bit of explanation, because when especially with the cat, less so with the softie, but the cat comes in a specific way, and I had it explained to me, and it makes sense. When you need to use it, you're either in shock because you're bleeding, or you've got an adrenaline dump because you were trying to help someone else who was bleeding, and in either case, you may lose some of your fine motor skills, and you also want to deploy and apply it as quickly as possible. But the way it comes, it comes optimized for storage, not for deployment. And so there are ways where you can set these tourniquets up where they deploy very quickly and with fewer things to mess with. And this was taught to me by someone who had some first aid, like trauma training. And then this video guy, I don't remember, but I believe he's actually a practicing paramedic of some sort. And especially in the cat application video, he talks about how he talked to people who had just come back from service. And you know, here's how they did it in the sandbox. They've got some ideas based on experience as to how this should be done properly. And just as an interesting aside here, I think it's interesting. One of the reasons we've advanced so far in tourniquet technology is because of the 20-year-old war in Afghanistan. And I'm not saying that all the loss of life was good, but I'm saying one of the good things that came out of it was we had this tremendous advance in medical technology. Because I remember growing up when I got first aid training in the Boy Scouts, I was told that you've got to be very careful about a tourniquet because someone could lose a limb, and you get to periodically loosen it. And as a result of the experiences in the Gulf War, they discovered, you can leave the tourniquet on for 8 hours or more, and the limb will be fine. And so we are sort of seeing a renaissance in tourniquet technology, and we should absolutely avail ourselves of that new knowledge.
Yeah. No, I remember reading a story about, actually it was in the iRobot. There's a story where somebody gets severely injured and the robot talks a young boy how to apply a tourniquet, and then tells him to draw a clock face on the boy's forehead with an indelible marker so that the EMTs can see what time the tourniquet was applied specifically for that same reason.
Hmm. Well, I mean, it's still a good idea.
Yeah. But either way, yeah, go find a find the bleed, but don't wait for that. Go get yourself some gear. David's got some links in the show notes that you can check that stuff out, and you get yourself some gear and see if you can figure out a way to carry it around. And because chances are you're going to find somebody who needs the bleeding stopped more than you need someone who needs the bleeding started with the gun.
One quick differentiation on the main difference between the cat and the softie. The cat uses Velcro and the softie doesn't. And I heard from Kelly Grayson, aka Ambulance Driver, that he prefers the softie because if you get sand, dirt, other things into Velcro, it won't close as well. And I thought that made sense. And this is a man who knows what's what. And so that's why I exclusively carry softies. But if you've got a cat, I mean, I've got a couple of cats, there's nothing wrong with it. Use what you have. But that's the main difference. One uses Velcro, the other does not.
Excellent. Well, I think we've reached the time in our show where we thank our listeners. Thank you so much for listening. And also a very special thanks to all our supporters on Patreon. To become a Patreon patron, go to patreon.com/assortedcalibers podcast to sign up. Patrons get an early release of the podcast, plus bonus content like the hilarious blooper reels, the ACP film tracks. I hope you guys enjoyed the Christmas gift of Die Hard. That went out to everybody. Get a little taste of how the ACP film tracks work, and the ACP mag dump.
Also, please remember to rate us on Apple Podcasts, subscribe to us on the platform of your choice, and share the show with your friends, both online and off.
You can get more from me at my blog, which is weirdworld.com, and you can hear me weekly on Handgun Radio on the Firearms Radio Network.
And you can get more from me at linktree.com/AaronPillette. That's linktr.ee/AaronPillette, all one word.
And of course, make sure to follow those show notes to the Gundies and vote for Aaron Pillette.
Daily.
Daily. And thanks to Nate Spencer for our music.
He's a butt master and I'm a pie cake, and I don't know what we are, but we're assorted, and so's our podcast. Good night, everybody.
Good night.
Delicious.